Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Kotaku Split Screen, the only podcast that never gets mad at video games. Why are you saying it's mad? It's not mad. Everything's fine. Maybe you're the one who's mad. It's July 25th, 2019, and we kick off this episode talking about the new gaming monitor Maddie just ordered, as well as the games we've been playing, including Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, Harry Potter Wizards Unite, and Dishonored Death of the Outsider. We're then joined by Kotaku's Joshua Rivera to talk about tilt and frustration in gaming, as well as whether 3 is indeed the perfect video game squad size. We close out with some off-topic discussion of Billions, the enjoyable new trailer for Netflix's Witcher series, and all that very, very exciting Marvel news. Blade, you guys. It's Blade. Stick around. And we are back for another episode. As always, we're so glad that you joined us to talk about video games and who knows what else. Anything could happen. My name is Kirk Hamilton, and I am joined, as ever, by Maddie Myers. Hello, Maddie. Nice to see you again.
Hi. It's me. And only me.
It is. Again, Jason is still on book leave. We have a special guest for our second segment, another Kotakuite who has never been on the show before. And we have a fun conversation about various things, so we're looking forward to that. But yeah, last week, let's get right into it. Last week, we talked about monitors, and Maddie, you were looking for a gaming monitor, and I gave you some advice. And of course, our listeners, who know basically everything about everything and like know a lot about gaming
monitors. Super geniuses.
We're very helpful, and we got some very helpful emails. And yeah, Maddie, maybe why don't you talk about what you learned from various emails that we got from listeners.
Oh boy, sure. So we got a really good email from Tim, who had a lot of advice, and I ended up choosing the monitor that he principally suggested. It's an LG monitor, 32GK650F.
If anybody like wants to look it up, read monitor model numbers
in a nasal voice. I have to. And so, in picking out this monitor, I had to learn about FreeSync technology, which you actually wrote into this document before I even told you that I had to learn about it. I have an NVIDIA card, but this monitor is technically designed for using FreeSync rather than G-Sync technology, the latter of which NVIDIA uses. FreeSync is what its competitor AMD cards use. And I could see myself getting an AMD card someday. Supposedly FreeSync is predicted to have a better future as a technology for whatever reason, or so I Googled. Listeners, you can feel free to write in and tell me what you think about FreeSync versus G-Sync technology, which is the better choice going forward. But I looked into it, and NVIDIA had some sort of update in January of this year that makes it possible for those cards to work with FreeSync technology as well. So hopefully when I get this monitor, it'll obviously work. I'll plug it into my computer and it will show an image. But if I want to use this super cool syncing technology and make sure that like everything looks as good as it possibly could, then I will figure that out and learn about that. And when I have this monitor on Friday, I have already ordered it. I'm excited. It's happening.
I'm excited to hear. So next week we'll hear an update on how you like your new adaptive sync monitor. This is definitely something that, so like I had said last time, when I switched to a G-Sync monitor, I was like, oh my God, like that was the thing that like going way above 60 FPS and having it just be variable and always smooth. Like you just don't have to turn V-Sync on anymore. And it's nice. I did not know this. This was actually really cool that Tim told me this, and this is a known thing. This is what I get for leaving game journalism. I miss out on these little, these like tech updates, but I didn't know that NVIDIA had added support for FreeSync, and that's really cool and makes me wish I had a FreeSync monitor, because I have a G-Sync monitor, and now it does suck to feel locked in. Like, I've never liked how NVIDIA did that, and because I believe that FreeSync is open source. I might be wrong about this, but I think that FreeSync monitors, like other people can make graphics cards that'll work with FreeSync as well.
Yeah.
And we're kind of at the beginning of this technology. I think that TVs are adding, if not FreeSync, some sort of adaptive sync so that maybe even the next generation of consoles, there's always rumors that maybe a console will have adaptive sync technology built in because it's really nice for playing a game, like to not have the latency that VSync adds. And I didn't know that they had added that, and that's a really cool move. I wish it would go the other way too, not because I necessarily want to get an AMD card, but there could totally come a time in the future where I maybe do. And
right, because FreeSync is the future, according to what I've looked up. And so you're going to have to get it.
Well, and it supports, if it supports all graphics cards, right, and G-Sync only supports NVIDIA, it makes sense that you would want the one with more options. And, you know, I just don't like that feeling of being locked in. Not a huge deal. NVIDIA graphics cards are fine. But anyways, that was a cool thing to learn. And I'm looking forward to hearing about what you think of your new monitor.
It's going to be wild. The colors are going to be so vibrant. I'm not even going to be able to look at the screen anymore. I'm going to be hurting
some
my eyes.
Visceral gaming. You're going to get some really visceral experiences. Speaking of visceral gaming experiences, let's talk about the visceral games that we've been playing. Great. Actually, nothing by visceral games. Just games.
No,
just regular
games. Just other games that are visceral, the adjective.
Yeah. What have you been playing, Maddie?
So I could have played more Outer Wilds, but instead I purchased a video game called Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 because I could not resist its siren call any longer. Mm. I just really wanted to play it. So I did. I have plenty of other games I could be playing, but it's a new game and I'm excited about it.
That's basically like the oldest story in the book. This is a Switch game, is that right?
It is a Switch game, and it is supposedly a sequel to Marvel Ultimate Alliances 1 and 2, but you don't need to have played those because the stories of them don't matter at all. And this game is made by a different developer. It's made by Team Ninja, but it is a surprisingly unsexy game despite the developer having a reputation for making that kind of thing.
And Marvel characters generally being quite attractive.
The Marvel characters, they're all gorgeous, they're all beautiful, but I have yet to run into any super sexy or horny content in this game. But maybe the next mission I'm about to play is going to be that.
You're about to get to the horny mission. You're almost there.
I don't know. Wolverine's clothes are just going to fall off and I'm going to be like, what is going on? New favorite game.
I spoke too soon.
Yeah, so I'm playing this. It's not that deep, honestly. So, did you ever play the X-Men arcade games when you were a kid? Or, any sort of game?
I feel like I recently played that game at Quarter World in Portland. It kind of sucks.
There's not much to it. So, these games are kind of like an extremely high-level, sophisticated version of the fantasy that the original X-Men arcade game is offering you. There are many, many more characters. There's a lot of RPG elements to it. You can level up each individual character. It's tons of people from the Marvel Universe. For whatever reason, this game didn't really have to worry about all the rights issues that other Marvel games and movies have had to worry about. So you've got Wolverine on the same team as Captain Marvel, and there ain't problem. Like, Jessica Jones is there. It's great. Yeah, everyone is in
Is her superpower that she drinks and then punches people, or is she just really strong?
Her superpower is that she stands there looking surly and telling you about missions that you get to do.
She begins to narrate the game for a minute.
Kicks things very hard and knocks them over. It's great. It's nice. Fun. Nice. But it's not... So the story... It's weird because the story is very clearly influenced by Marvel movies because Thanos is the main villain, there's Infinity Stones, etc. But then it's also obviously influenced design-wise by the comic books. So you end up in this weird situation where all the characters look like their comic book counterparts and so therefore aren't necessarily recognizable to someone who's only seen the movies. So there's weird villains, Proxima Midnight is one of the characters in this game. She's one of Thanos's henchmen. And she's actually in the movies.
Yeah, played by Carrie Coon in the movie, right? Isn't my favorite actor who's barely recognizable in the movie, but I love Carrie Coon because she was in The Leftovers and she's amazing.
She's great. She's barely in the Marvel movies, but she is in there. She's one of I think she's the only female henchman that Thanos
she gets
has
like
in
a couple
movies.
Lines. She's the one who all the ladies band up and kill in Infinity
right.
War.
Right. So she's in this game and she's also part of Thanos's team, but she is wearing a completely different outfit. You would never recognize that it's her unless you were a comic book nerd who knew who Proxima Midnight was. You would never know who that is. I mean, you could, but it's like this weird world where you need to kind of be a fan of both the comics and also the movies in order to care about this. But maybe you don't. Maybe you could come in on board with this and just have only seen the movies. But if that's the case, the story is not really deep enough to have that be the reason why you stick around. It's just it doesn't, nothing really matters that much. It's just, maybe it's just because it's hard for me to care about big Marvel plot lines because in right. this post-Infinity War landscape, who even cares anymore where the Infinity Stones are? But it is like very strange to be playing a game where they're just now suddenly a video game MacGuffin that's like being tossed around by different characters. Right, right, and you're like, right. well, okay, now I need to like hack and slash through all of these little sparkly crates and fight these certain bosses and like do this thing. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, the Infinity Stones have been captured by someone else, or oh, now we have them, good guys have them briefly, oh, now someone else does. I don't know. Mm. It's the stakes of the game, I think, have been unfortunately broken by how weird the stakes are in the Marvel universe at large, but right. that's maybe fine. It's okay with me that the game isn't that deep, but yeah, I don't know. I also, when I played this game at E3, I couldn't help but mentally compare it a lot to the other Marvel's Avengers game that we don't know a lot about, and
right.
the one that to me at least looks like a far more serious narrative game, like kind of in the mm-hmm. style of the Batman Arkham games, where it's going to be a little more like the movies, like serious, like, I don't know, not that Marvel movies are ever that serious, but you know what I mean, like trying yeah, to actually yeah. tell a story. This game really isn't trying to do that. Like, there is a story, there is dialogue, you know, characters are quippy, but it's about the hacking and slashing and leveling up your character and like seeing the numbers get higher. It's
kind of like a top down, like beat 'em yep. up too, right? Like mm-hmm. you're kind of farther away from the characters. There mm-hmm. isn't that high resolution.
Yes. Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
let's look at their facial expressions and they do amazing cutscene and like,
well, now and then they do cutscenes that look really cool. So they do have okay. some cool looking cutscenes in there. It's not,
got it.
It's not as gorgeous as I think that Crystal Dynamics Avengers game is aiming mm-hmm. to be and already is in the demo. It looked very pretty, but it's not that level. It's a little more cartoony than that. But like there's a pretty some pretty good kind of a game, in this right? game. Yeah, I mean, it is. It's just, this game has like a weird tone. I don't know. I'm still working out how I feel about that part of it, I guess. It's like, it's almost too corny. I don't know. Anyway, I don't hate it. I'm enjoying it. It's cute. I can imagine mm-hmm. how a lot of Marvel properties have trouble with tone these days because they don't know how serious or unserious they want to be. And this game is kind of struggling with that as well. But...
Hmm.
I don't
interesting.
Know. It's yeah, it's
I probably
fun.
Probably won't play it only because there's enough.
It doesn't seem like your shit
out,
at all.
But it, yeah, it sounds cool. I definitely have been hearing people dig it, so that's cool mm-hmm. that you're playing it.
Yeah.
What else are you playing?
I'm still playing Phoenix Wright, but I don't have anything new to say about it. It's just a thing that's in my life as well. And mm-hmm. also, Harry Potter Wizards Unite had its first community day this past weekend. And I was so excited to like go out and play this game outdoors and maybe meet other people playing the game. But it happened during this absurd heat wave in New England. And so my girlfriend and I still went outside and played it, but it was just the dumbest thing ever.
Oh,
like
man.
It was so hot. We played it for like an hour and I leveled up multiple times, but I was just like, this is not freaking worth it at all. I wrote a little post about how I made a mistake and didn't meet anyone else who was playing the game because the streets were like a dead zone.
Like followed the health advisories and stayed
yeah,
inside.
And even the game itself had a health advisory that was like, there's
oh,
a
yeah.
weather danger warning right now.
They definitely
like,
don't want a piece
hot.
Of that liability.
Yeah,
that was like when Pokemon Go added all the warnings, like mm-hmm. look up when you're crossing the street. Don't get hit while playing our game, please.
I mean, even sort now, of both of thing. Those games tell you when you load them up, do not trespass while playing this game, which I'm mm-hmm. like, having that appear every single time I open the game is now completely useless. Like I now no longer see that
right,
box
right.
as meaning anything anymore, but perhaps
right. surely that's just like legal liability stuff, right? Like
I
they want to put it
so.
There so that they can't be held liable. Not that they would be, but
I don't know
why.
If they would be or not, but I don't mm-hmm. know. I'm just sad that I'm the only person playing this Harry Potter game. It's a pretty good game. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, it sounds cool. Those games kill my battery. It's funny playing on
yeah.
a hot day because it makes your phone so hot. You're like you're holding a hot potato on a 105 degree day. It would not be fun. I always just, I don't have the battery. Like even for Pokemon Go, I remember being like, I'm so protective of my battery on my phone and watching it just like visibly drain, you know, at 1 p.m. or something. I'm like, dude, I have at least 8 more hours until I go home.
Rest of your day. Yeah. I think they've improved that somewhat. There's like battery saver settings in the games now that weren't there when those games first came out, or at least Harry Potter launched with them. Pokemon Go didn't. But, you know, there's not that much to them. They're more fun games if you have someone to play with and also if you like walking with someone. It's
right,
really
right.
just that. It's like if that's the life that you live, then they're fun. But if it's not, then there's no point in playing these games at all. So
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, I have some friends who play Pokemon. Some of my Destiny friends actually would play Pokemon Go, and they'd be like, let's just go out to this neighborhood and walk around. And it was mostly like, I think they were walking around and getting a coffee and enjoying mm-hmm. the afternoon playing Pokemon Go. And that actually always sounded really nice. And I don't really have anyone who would do that in Portland, but I could see that being a nice thing to do on a nice day in Portland. So that's cool.
It Maybe is I'll still nice.
Check it out one of these days.
What are you playing, Kirk?
So mostly Death of the Outsider. I played a little bit though of Tetris Effect, which is out on PC now and just came out yesterday, and is awesome. I mean, I thought that game was awesome when it came out on PS4 last year. It really rules, and it looks ridiculous. You should play, man. Yeah, if you can
play
this game,
I should buy a second copy of it
on your bonkers monitor. Because yeah, at like an ultra high frame rate and really high resolution, it's like crazy. And then, so I wanted to play it on Oculus Rift because that's the VR headset that I just sort of leave set up. So I got out my PSVR to play it on PlayStation, but it's another headset and it takes up so much space in my office that I was like, I can't leave this out. So I only played a bit in VR, which is, it's really cool in VR. So I was playing it in VR. It's also really cool and it looks better. You know, you can play it at super high resolution in VR. You can like double the resolution, which makes it sharper. And it's a sweet game. I still get the people who are like, $40 for Tetris. Like, totally get it. If it's not for everybody, that is expensive. Maybe it'll be on sale at some point. But man, it's something. It's really cool. So I played some of that. I'm going to play some more. But mostly I've been playing Death of the Outsider, which I played a bunch more of it just yesterday. And that game is awesome. It's so good. It's the best. Man, it's such a cool refinement of so many Dishonored things. Like, I have specific thoughts on it now. I beat the whole sort of first major mission. I'm in the second one. Have you played any of the Dishonored games, or are you familiar with the series?
Yeah. I haven't played Death of the Outsider, though.
Okay. It's really cool. So each one kind of introduces new wrinkles on the existing ideas and mechanics. I'd say the biggest things in Death of the Outsider are... Well, the one thing, this is actually not like a skill or something small, I'll get into this in a second, but one is that there's no more chaos. So there's no more like the thing where you kill people and then you get a worse ending and the game world changes. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen anymore. So you're playing as Billy Lurk. You're like, I think she's voiced by Rosario Dawson. They always have like super A-list voice talent in Dishonored games for some reason. Like, wasn't Susan Sarandon in the first one or something? There's all these famous people in Dishonored games. It's crazy. If you look at the list, it's like, what? That person was that character? Like, what's your name? Plays Hit Girl is like the girl that you rescue in the first one. I'm forgetting her name.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, there's all these famous people in it. It's like, anyways, that's a side tangent. But so you play as Billy Lurk, and the idea is kind of that Billy Lurk is just this assassin. She's sort of just a product of Dunwall, and she's not some ruler or person who's changing anything, really. So it just doesn't matter. You can kill people or not, and you get a rating at the end of levels that's like, if you were totally silent, you just get a little check next to that. You didn't get spotted. Or if you don't kill anyone, you get a check next to that. But it apparently does not check the ending. I Googled this and was sure of it. And then I was like, oh, awesome. So I can just not worry so much about if something goes pear-shaped and I wind up killing a bunch of people. It's fine. I'm not like... altering my outcome, which I vastly prefer to Metro Exodus, which I just played. And if you remember, I was saying that I got the bad ending in that without even really realizing that my actions at various points were influencing the ending. And that was like kind of a bummer feeling. I didn't really care, whatever. Like, I can just watch the other ending and whatever. Not a big deal. But it is like, oh, and if I had known that playing the game, it would have kind of really affected how I was playing. Anyways, it's really nice to not have that be the case. Did that affect you when you played like Dishonored? Do you remember having that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't love stuff like that. I never beat Dishonored, not because of that. It's actually just that at that time I was not into stealth games. I think if I played it now, I've gotten better at stealth games since becoming a person who learned to meditate and is a more patient, less frustrated person in general. Yeah. I've really leveled up my stealth game feelings, but there was a long time in my life when I was just like, screw stealth games. Like, I'm too impatient. I hate that I just have to sit there, and like any game that asks that of me, I wouldn't like. And Dishonored has some of that. I mean, I think if you want to play it well, you have to be a patient person. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. There's more room for like being impatient in this one, especially because you do screw up and get spotted, you can like part of, it can be really fun to just get in a wild situation. And if you're paying attention, you can kind of rock whoever spotted you. Like, you have so many magic powers and you're so strong that unless you just try to fight four guys straight up in a sword fight, you'll probably get beaten. But other than that, you can like teleport around and like, you know, blast them. And
that sounds very satisfying. And also getting check marks. Do you get trophies as well? Because I feel like that's a little bit different psychologically than getting like some sort of reward in a game for doing something. Right. If you just get a check mark that's like, okay, you did this. It's I don't know. It kind of takes the pressure off, I think. I would think it would.
It does. And that's why I like that. Like, there may be trophies tied to that too, which would be fine, whatever. But like, there's no in-game thing. And actually, so a couple other just changes that they make. One is that like your mana, you don't have to take mana potions. So it just, you have a set amount of it and it always regenerates no matter what you're using, which is just a smart change. It's like, there's a lot of these little smart changes. That's a smart one because it just encourages you to use your cool powers more. In the originals, I would always just hoard all my mana pills, just like in BioShock. Like, I would never use whatever it was called, the thing that you inject yourself with, because I didn't want to run out at a crucial moment. And then you just always hoard it and you have too much. So it like just encourages you to do it, which is great and makes you use your abilities more. And so that's cool. The way they've changed some of the abilities is cool. Like, there's a, you know, Blink is like the defining Dishonored ability, which is this kind of, this is a first person game for anyone who doesn't know. You're kind of sneaking around and assassinating people and stuff. And and you can like look at a thing and you'll press a button and it like creates a little floating ball, and then you let go and you just warp to that area. So it's awesome for like, you know, Nightcrawler bamfing your way around a bunch of guards, like up, and all the levels are designed to let you do that. Mm-hmm. And there's a kind of refined version of it where you can like drop a little like placeholder that then you can sneak around and like go do something, and then you press the button and it warps
and
you to there.
Go there? Oh, cool.
Right. So it just allows for a little bit of different things. And then also the in the earlier games, you would like, you do this thing, he would always go, enhanced eyes, which is like a corny thing to say, but it would let you see through walls and you could like see guards and stuff, and it would like change your view when you activated it. But now what it does, and it's so much better, it changes the whole game, is you become like a projected ghost version of yourself, and time totally freezes, and you can float and walk around all around near your character, and you can like tag bad guys, and you can see through walls, and you can see items. So it almost makes the game not turn-based, but it adds this element of you can freeze time at any moment. So a guy will see you and he'll be coming around the corner and he'll be like, shit, what's about to happen? And you can call that up and like go and look around and be like, okay, he's coming and there's that guy behind him and this dude's about to come around the corner, but if I go up here, and you kind of figure out what you're going to do, and then you warp back into your body and like, you know, kind of more of what's going on. So it's super cool. It's great. I'm like really into it. There's like side contracts you can do with like extra stuff that are all really fun. I'm doing all of them. I'm doing a bank heist mission, which like bank heists are always super fun in this kind of game, and you're this like criminal breaking into a bank. So I'm really, really into it. I feel like I'm actually gonna finish the whole thing. It may even like delay me starting Fire Emblem or Wolfenstein, both of which I'm looking forward to, and both of which come out on Friday. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, whatever, this game is sweet. This is like a Dishonored game that I never played. So I'm really digging it. It's it's good. Oh, one thing I don't like is that the it doesn't run that well on PC, and it doesn't work with adaptive refresh rates on my monitor.
Womp womp. So, that's too
bad.
Yeah,
so it's kind of juddery and weird, which you get used to it, but that is sort of frustrating. Anyway, though, good game.
Cool. Sounds like maybe a Dishonored game I could actually play.
It's good. It's, I would say, at least mechanically, the best one. Though there are some levels in Dishonored 2 that are amazing. I mean, that game, holy shit, like that game is really cool.
You're probably
like, where
right.
You're like warping through different timelines within the same level, and a really, very cool game. Anyways, let's take a break, and we'll be back with Joshua Rivera to talk about tilt and negative feelings in games, and also whether or not 3 is the perfect squad size.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Joshua Rivera is the newest staff writer at Kotaku.com. He joined since I left Kotaku, and I've been very excited to see him there, and I've enjoyed reading his writing, and we're glad to have him on the show. Joshua, welcome to Kotaku Split Screen.
Oh my God, thank you so much. This is really, that's really nice.
Yay! Joshua's here!
He is. We're slowly but surely, we're getting everybody on the show. So it's cool to have you here, and I came up with a topic for us to talk about for this segment, and that topic is summed up in one word, tilt. So we're going to be talking about tilt and what tilt is and tilting, the scourge of tilting, or maybe tilting is a good thing. I don't know. I don't know how you both feel about tilt.
Being tilted is usually the way that's conjugated.
Yes, the status of being tilted. So I guess before we get into it, there's a number of different directions we can go with this, but why don't we start by coming up with a working definition of tilt for people who maybe haven't heard of tilt, though I would guess most of our listeners have. So Joshua, why don't you take a crack at telling us what, in your view, what is being tilted, what is tilt?
Oh, this is great, because I also just came across this term. Very recently.
Oh, nice. Okay, great.
Hip so, new like, gaming I, term.
Yeah. The new lingo on the streets. Have your children been using tilt? No, it's not.
Oh, no.
It's not a,
watch out. Find out more.
It's not a designer drug or anything like that. It's so from thinking about it and like encountering it and just like seeing people on forum posts, you know, writing about like Destiny or anything like that, running, you know, like exotic challenges or anything like that. You know, for me, what I figured out is that tilt is when you get frustrated to the point where it starts to consistently affect your performance, right? So, like, I think about it like the pinball term, where it just sort of like you try too hard to maybe do something that you shouldn't do, and it just locks up and you can't play anymore. Except this thing is getting angry, which I guess you also shouldn't do.
Which is, and yeah, I was thinking about this as well, and I believe that is where it comes from, which is if you shake the pinball machine, it gives you a tilt warning, which means you are tilting the machine. Basically, you're cheating, and you're trying to, like, you could be, like, literally shaking your ball. It's like the pinball version of shaking a vending machine to try to get the friggin' Doritos that you paid for that got stuck. And I think that that's, yeah, where it comes from. Okay, that's a solid definition. Maddie, would you add anything to Joshua's working definition?
Sure. I would say that being tilted is an updated version of a much older term, which is being a sore loser. And I feel like where I see tilt come into play is usually in the context of someone having experienced a loss in a game or a failure in a game of some form, usually in fighting games. This is where I see it come up, is or any sort of competitive game, any sports qualify. You lose a match, maybe you lose a round, and then you get tilted because you are a sore loser, and that affects how you do in the following match. That's just another sort of subsection, sub-definition of being tilted that exists. And we could talk about this later, but it's definitely something I used to struggle with, for sure. So can share some depressing anecdotes about that. What is your definition, though, Kirk? Why don't you?
I want to share some tilt stories for sure. yeah, that's pretty much my definition as well. I think it's when, you know, when you're doing so badly that you get frustrated and your frustration causes you to do worse. It's like a vicious cycle of doing badly. I think that that's like an essential part of tilt. It's not just being salty about a loss. It's that if that saltiness oversalts the potato chip of your gameplay and it becomes inedible. That's my understanding of tilt. I think we can get into like how, what tilts each of us, because I think everyone gets tilted about various things.
Yeah.
And I think it's, that can be very interesting. I am always fascinated by, like, you know, sort of debriefing after I play a game or looking back at my state of mind and the various states of mind I went through while playing it and different things that make me feel different ways. Yeah, I brought this up partly because a group of guys that I play tabletop games with were talking about the term as it pertained to tabletop gaming over the weekend.
Wow.
One of them had said
we were playing. It's expanded into the world of tabletop gaming.
Right. And they, some of them hadn't heard the term, and I was kind of explaining it and thinking, oh, this is kind of an interesting term. That's a fun concept to talk about, because it's always fun to talk about being mad and frustrated at games, because what else are games but things that make us angry and frustrated? Anyways, yeah, that's kind of my definition, I guess. So I think to think of one example, something that happens to me a lot with tilt is that I have kind of two versions. There's the version that happens just to me, and there's the version that I share with my friends. And I think that those two kinds of tilt are kind of, they're similar. It's like the same kind of a concept, but they function very differently. And what I mean by that is, like, personal tilt is if I'm fighting a boss in like a really hard game, you know, Bloodborne or whatever, God of War, like that final Valkyrie fight in God of War. When I get tilted on that, it's when it's usually related to time. Like, I'll look at the clock and I'll see that it's been 3 hours or something and my Sunday is rapidly vanishing. And I'll think, oh my God, what am I doing with my life? And I'll kind of get so depressed that I just, each fight against the boss kind of, you know, where you're just like, oh, fuck it. Like,
that's like an existential form of tilt, though. That's beyond just the game, where you're like looking outside your life and being like, I am playing a game for this long. That is somehow bad. I don't know. I feel like that's its own definition of tilt beyond just getting frustrated with a boss straight up. But continue.
Oh, no, that's true. Joshua, what were you saying to that?
Oh, no, it's just like I sort of like, you know, I reach this point where it's just sort of like, you know, what am I doing with my life right now?
I don't feel like I have this that often, but I feel sorry for you guys.
I think I mentioned this when we were tied. I don't remember what game it was, but there's a feeling I get in my head sometimes where it's the feeling of the only thing that's keeping this game from immediately ending the moment this fight begins, like the boss will just kill me immediately and then it will be over, is me. And that can become a very exhausting thing to be aware of, is that I am the one who must continually push back this like floodgate, you know, like I have to keep my finger in the dam or whatever, otherwise the water will just flood through. And you start to get that feeling of, at least in boss fights, I'll get the feeling of kind of, I'll take a really hard hit at the very beginning after a ton of runs through it and just be like, oh well, fuck this, I'm done, and like just kind of set the controller down and just lose. And that's where it's time to take a break. I think I wrote a thing forever ago for Kotaku that was like guides for fighting a boss, and one of the most important tips is take a break, because tilt, at least I see that as a type of tilt. So that's the one type, is like personal tilt. The other type is the shared tilt, and I think that's much more dangerous, because that's kind of getting into like toxic tilt, right? Because like toxicity are things that spread. I kind of think of it as like something that spreads, and like that's when you're in chat with your team and you're just raging about how bad you're losing and how you're never going to win and how, oh, what are we even doing? This is impossible. We should just give up. And that can infect your teammates and be, and like lead to very bad team play, which I think is a very specific and very bad and harmful kind of tilt, at least in my experience.
Yeah, although you're being pretty kind in your description of it there, I feel like the far worse version of that is when you start blaming your teammates personally for making mistakes. And perhaps you are the one who also made a mistake, but in that moment, you don't necessarily feel that way. You're just projecting your tilt upon others and forcing them.
Nobody ever makes mistakes in video games. It's always everybody else. Like, maybe they made you make a mistake. But that makes it not a mistake. They're the ones who made the mistake in forcing you to commit the error. That is very true. I don't generally do that in games. And also, I'm thinking of like a Destiny raid, which is, there have been times, and I'm always working on this, but there are times when you're in a raid and it's really late and you've been trying the same stupid, it's essentially like a 6-person elaborate choreographed dance that you've all had to figure out on the fly over like a lag delay chat. And so there's always miscommunications and failures. And there comes a point where you're just exhausted. And it is easy to kind of lapse into despair and just think, we can't do this. We should give up, which is always a very dangerous thing to introduce to the late night raid. You know, oh, maybe we should just come back and try this fresh tomorrow, or we need to level up, we're not high enough level. And when you start introducing that kind of thing, it can lead to that. But yeah, definitely the thing you're saying, Maddie, where, you know, like, it's the thing of the League of Legends. I feel like Riot Games did a lot of... were they doing all this research about this? So they were always talking about the research they did about this, about how, like, it was actually same team stuff that is, like, that led to that kind of anger because people were blaming their teammates.
Right, and they did a lot of research about the sore loser phenomenon and, like, how long you have to wait before you head back into a game and whether that affects how badly you treat the other people in your team. I don't know. But so, Joshua, when you're playing Destiny raids, do you have this experience? Like, do you have friends that you play with like Kirk does, or do you not so much have that?
Oh, I mean, I personally never miss a shot. I just hit targets that aren't just there yet.
Play perfectly.
Right, you know? Right. So you've never experienced frustration in your life. You've never had any moment where you thought you were going to fail a Destiny raid, right? Is that right?
Well, I don't really raid that much, which is like something I'm looking to get into now. I just like hit up some friends recently about like, okay, let me see about that raiding life.
It's a good life. It's a it's a big time commitment, but you're probably gonna have fun. They're pretty good.
Yeah, but yeah, this is also just how I play games socially. I don't really play things competitively, right? Like if I even if I'm playing a competitive game, it's all just like an excuse for me and my pals to, like, make fun of each other anyway. You know,
okay.
Like, and if my role in the group is to be the person bad at the game that we're playing, I am fine for that, with that. If it leads to like more good times and fun.
Interesting.
That's a good attitude.
That is. It sounds like you're describing very low stakes playing, which is a kind of in a perfect world, we would all play games in this way. I generally do, right? It's a video game. It's fine. You're doing it for fun. I feel like one thing I kind of want to, I guess we could chew on what causes tilt, or like what are the causes of tilt? And definitely one of them is a feeling of stakes, right?
Yeah.
Anytime it feels like you're losing something, like a couple examples. Obviously, one is if you're on a team and you're letting your team down and you're getting mad because they want to win and you think they want to win and you're not winning. Or if it's like a competition, if you're in some kind of tournament or something, like in Destiny Trials of Osiris is an example. If you get loses, you don't get as good gear. Mm-hmm. So you have to like go get a new ticket, and that doesn't actually exist in the game right now, but when it was in, it was that way. Or like bounties, like an exotic bounty, like I think was the Thorn one this way, or the Last Word one was this way, where like you had to get a certain number of kills in PvP, but each time you got killed, you lost progress. And so it really messes with you psychologically, and you can tilt super hard because you look at your number and you're like, ugh, I'm playing like such garbage and I've lost 10%. I mean, I'm behind where I was an hour ago when I started, which is a very like tilting feeling. So I feel like stakes are definitely one thing that kind of causes tilt. What are some other things I'm not thinking of?
I mean, I think you can also go out of your way to avoid situations that will cause it, which it sounds like maybe Joshua does. I don't know. Personally, I think I've overcome a lot of my sore loser feelings about competitive games, which was not easy, and I can get into that later, maybe. But I still definitely struggle with it in single player games, not in the existential way that you two described, but just in the straightforward, like feeling like a failure way of like, oh, I guess I'm not good enough at this game. Like that form of tilting, I definitely still experience. And I don't know how to get around that. Like, the only way I know is to take a break from the game. But sometimes I'm like, this is the only few hours I have to play a game, and I'm spending it on a really difficult boss that I really want to be able to beat so that I can like advance in this game or have a good experience later. But I'm just ruining my own time by forcing myself to continue to play, and also by being in that psychological space, probably performing worse at the game. So I don't know. What are you guys' tips for getting around that?
Well, I think that's the break thing is, as far as tips go, like taking a break is probably the best thing, especially in a single player situation. I think maybe one reason it tends to rear its head in multiplayer situations is because it's harder to take a break when you're playing with a group of people, because there's this feeling that like, oh, we're all doing this. The thing you said though, Maddie, about I've only got 2 hours and here I am stuck on this thing, even that is kind of a form of stakes, right?
Yeah.
It's like there starts to be a feeling of, oh man, like I only have this set amount of time, or I set aside this evening to play this game, and I've basically wasted the time.
Yeah.
You know, I've spent all the time beating my head against the game. It's kind of the same feeling as like the real world tilt you feel when you set aside an evening to play a game and you go to play it and like your console needs to download an update, and then the game needs to download an update, and it's an hour and a half later, and like you still haven't played this stupid game, and you're like, well, there goes this whole weekend, what was I even doing? Like, it's kind of that same feeling of anger over wasted time, I guess.
Yeah.
I think it's also what you guys are talking about. Get at a little bit at like perspective, which is also a hard thing to what do you call it? You don't really encounter it in when you're playing with other people, because everybody's doing the same thing, and you feel, and you owe it to the people you're playing with to make sure that the time you chose to spend with them is you know, as good as it can be. But when you're playing solo, you're only in your own head. And so like, I live with my partner and she does not play video games at all. And is like not interested or anything like that. So like one day, you know, she'll like be walking by the living room where I'm playing, and I'll be like, and she'll look at me like I'm a freaking alien. Cause like nobody gets that mad at a movie.
No, it's true. I think a lot about Emily actually doesn't like it when I'm playing. It's a specific type of game, actually, like Divinity Original Sin 2, like a turn-based tactics game. A lot of times I get very stressed out by those games, and I really enjoy it as kind of part of my experience, but there's a lot of like, oh my God, oh shit, oh no, oh you idiot, oh I can't believe I did this, okay come on, oh no,
oh no,
no you asshole, no. And like there's a lot of that, and there are times where I'll be kind of berating myself like, oh of course, because I am a giant idiot, I did that, and I'll kind of say that out loud, and I'm wearing headphones and kind of oblivious, and she's sitting there listening to me just like beat on myself, and she's like, dude, I don't like it when you're hard on yourself like about that kind of thing, which makes me realize I'm kind of like externalizing the tilt that I'm feeling toward myself maybe in those moments.
But are you still kind of having fun doing that though? Because I feel like I also have that experience with those kinds of games where I'm like, oh idiot, but like I don't even mean it that way. I'm still having a fun experience playing StarCraft or whatever it may be, because it's like this, the stakes are high, but like in a fun way that's exciting. And maybe that isn't translatable into what I'm saying or my body language, but it's a more positive experience than me like throwing myself at a boss I can't defeat for an hour.
Right. It's kind of like, well, it's like what you were saying, Joshua. I think that the, you know, when your partner walks by and hears you, it's this very different perspective on the experience that you're having. And so, and like everyone kind of has that. So that's also just like a kind of, like speaking of perspectives, an interesting perspective to consider is the person outside.
Yeah. Shame.
Experiencing shame. Yes.
Yeah. Shame is a good coping technique.
It's definitely, it's an important feeling. But yeah, I think that there's a fine line. Like, I guess I'm usually having a good time, but it can kind of tip over into being actually just frustrated.
Yeah.
Though usually with that kind of game, especially turn-based games, those are games that I save scum and like do all kinds of stuff to get around.
So
it isn't the same as, like a God of War boss fight or a Bloodborne boss fight or something. I think one thing that really drives me nuts is when I feel like I'm angry at the game as much as I'm angry at myself. Sometimes I tilt at a game. Like, I remember, I think it was in Uncharted 3. There was a lot of cheap deaths in Uncharted 3. It was one of the frustrating things about that game. And the enemies a lot of times would laugh at you after they killed you. And so you would die. And then you'd hear, like, your teammate, Elena or whoever, would be like, Nathan, like, Drake. And, like, because you died. And that, like, whatever Hine or whatever instrument it was would be like, would like play and the screen would go black and white. And then you'd hear some guy, some, you know, Gomer that killed you would be like, ha 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 ha, got you or something. And it was the worst. And you'd hear it over and over and over again as you died. I remember that made me very upset at that game. So it's partly like, I guess that's part of it, right? Is you can feel mad at the people who made the game. Like, F you people for making this stupid thing.
But you don't contact them. You don't say that. You don't post that on the internet.
Yes,
ideally.
No. Good point. I am not in no way endorsing harassing game developers over their decisions. They make wonderful things, and sometimes games are hard, and that's totally fine. But I'm a more abstracted feeling of frustration, which is an interesting thing for game developers to consider, is that they are trying to frustrate us, right?
Like,
a game has to place things that we must then overcome, and some of that involves frustration. So it's like a fine line, and sometimes even games that I've been really mad at, just because I'm having a hard time beating them, it's wound up being like a rewarding, cool experience, right? Like, it is possible to experience tilt in a safer, positive way. Or is it, maybe, is tilt fundamentally bad?
I think about this a little bit too, where it's just sort of like, it's okay to be bad at a game. It's okay to be so bad at a game that you can't finish it, right? Like, I think that's fine. You know, like, I will be upset if I only had $60 to spend and I couldn't, you know, get further than an hour into a game. But I also would like to, you know, like, if, like, I remember, like, when I was a kid and, you know, only had so much money, right? Like, I tried to know everything I could about a game before I bought it, you know? So, like, I generally had a good idea, like, what I could handle and what I couldn't, right? So, you know, if like, I can't play a game, if I can't, I'm not good enough for it, like, that's fine. Like, maybe in 6 months or a year, I will be, you know? Like, there's this weird thing where it's just sort of like, you know, I like to interrogate the notion, just sort of like, I deserve to see everything that's in this game. And I don't think that's healthy, you know? I think one of the cool things about games is that you can have your own unique experience, and it's different from everybody else's who played the game. And so, like, my experience is one where I was able to do these things because I was able to put the time into being good enough or skilled enough or just, you know, attentive enough to see that part of the game. You are someone who's different and someone who has different priorities and different sort of, like, things that you care about. Seeing, and so you go and see those things. So yeah, I think just sort of like it's a less interesting world where we all have the same experience with a medium that is so dynamic, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. There's something empowering about that, even about just sort of making the decision that you've gotten enough, because some of it isn't even, it's not like such a clear binary between I cannot get past this point in this game, therefore I cannot see the whole thing, and I am not willing to do what is required, what will be required of me to get past this point, which I think is at least for me, more common. Like Sekiro is a good example. I loved that game. I played the crap out of that game. I got super far in it. I beat a ton of bosses. I got like good at the fighting. It's super tough. Had a great time. Got to this point where like all these tough enemies like invade this one area, and I was like having all these bananas fights. I'd seen enough people being like, the last few bosses are a giant pain in the ass. And I was like, you know what? I'm good. I maybe will come back. And I know that I could have put another 30 hours into the game and like beaten the whole thing. You know, I've beaten From games. It's fine. I have nothing to prove. But like that was a very empowering decision. And then other times, you know, like Hollow Knight, I played almost 100, like 120% of that game or something because I loved it and I like just wanted to stay in it. So I kind of committed myself to taking the time to like beat the super hard leveled up second phase bosses that I didn't need to do, you know? And so there's something kind of cool about making the conscious decision that no, I don't even need to do this. I will avoid the tilt in this, in this instance.
No, Hollow Knight is definitely the example I come to with it, where it's just sort of like, I love that game, right? And like,
it's so good.
It's incredible. But you know, getting to, you know, the first of the final bosses, right? Like a final boss, is plenty hard. Like, like I don't know, is it?
You don't have to beat the Radiance to have the complete Hollow Knight experience.
No, exactly.
Let alone whatever that hyped up Radiance that was in the DLC was. Like, no.
Yeah.
That's not necessary.
No, like the Hollow Knight himself was like hard enough, right? Where it's sort of like, I enjoyed that. You know, I spent a solid 2 hours taking that boss on, you know, like working my way, you know, in and out of tilt into that flow state that you need to just like, you know, beat a boss, right? And then I did it, and I got that ending, and I knew it wasn't the only ending. And, like, there was all this DLC. Like, the Grim Troop looks super freaking cool.
Yeah.
But I also know that it's super freaking hard. And it's like, you know what? Like, maybe in a month I'll come back to that game and be like, okay, I'm going to sit down, relearn how to play, and, like, be good enough to take that on. And I get to see this cool new stuff that I haven't, you know, I didn't see the first time through as a nice reward. But if I don't, that's fine, too. I still love Hollow Knight.
Like, it's almost a relief sometimes when there's just... they released the absolute most ridiculous hard thing. Like, cause I did the next level up from that, which was I spent whatever 10 hours or something, 6 hours fighting the Radiance, and I beat the Radiance. It's like one of the hardest things I've ever done in a game. That was cool. It was really hard. I probably could have spent that time doing something else. Now there's like the gods and the Godmaster, that final DLC. There's a version of the Radiance fight where you can't take any hits and it's like twice as fast. And I watched a YouTube video of it, and it's like watching that fireball level in Mario Maker. Like, it's the same level where you're like kind of just screaming quietly like the whole time you're watching, because it's so ridiculous. And I know that fight super inside out, and watching someone do it on that level, I was like, okay, cool, I'm never gonna do that. Like, that's just never gonna happen.
You don't want to learn how to do it is really what it is. I mean, I guess it's about skill, but I really like your framing, Joshua, about it's really just, are you willing to put in the time or not? And I feel like that's something that did help me get to a place with fighting games where I wasn't so angry at them, because I realized that so much of those games, it's just about how much time you've put in to learning how each of them works. And there was a time when I was playing a lot of Street Fighter, played a lot of 4, played a lot of 5 after that came out, and I got good at it because I was playing it so much every day. And I just put in the time. And I remember before I had that chunk of time, there would be times in my life when I'd be like, oh, I'm so jealous of people who are really good at Street Fighter 4. Like, how did they get so good at it? And I guess I'll never be good. And they just somehow naturally got really good. And oh, life is so unfair. Like, they're so much faster, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But like, eventually you just get to the point where you have played it so much that you see the patterns, you see the flow chart in your head of the ways that different matches and matchups can go. And you're just like, well, I put in the time. Now I understand how this game works. And that doesn't mean I'm quote unquote better than someone else. I mean, it is like according to matches won, but it isn't necessarily according to skill because it's really time in addition to skill. It's it's weird. Like the way we measure the idea of skill is weird even.
It's super true. This is a thing in music, right? Like I have this happen all the time with various musical instruments where I'm like, so you know, my main instrument was saxophone and I spent hours practiced so much saxophone like when I was in school. Yeah. And then I learned all these other instruments afterward and I'll never be like as good at whatever guitar as I am at saxophone.
Because you didn't do your 1,000 hours or whatever it is.
Right. Like it's helpful, I guess, to have gotten there on one instrument, but there are totally times where I'll watch someone play and just be like, oh man, that person is so good at guitar. And then I'm like, well, yeah, sure. They've probably been playing since they were like 10 and they practiced every day and they like worked really hard. And the more you practice, the better you get. And it really like, there's always room for like whatever innate abilities, but like practice is 90% of the game. And it's the same thing in games. It's kind of like, I think if there's one positive thing, and maybe this is getting a little beyond Tilt and just into like
mindset. Yeah.
Challenge and like frustration and failure in games. But like, if there's one thing that's good about Tilt is that, or it's that's good about how video games get us to experience those feelings and even the negative, you know, like self-defeating feelings like Tilt, it's that they do give you a space to like play with those feelings or like to have them happen in a safer place than like at work or in the middle of your career or like out in the world. Like it's like kind of a good simulator for overcoming adversity.
It's so true. I've never experienced Tilt at work, never been frustrated about anything at
no,
work.
No, of course not. Games journalism is never frustrating.
Nope. It's just, and the reason why is because of the Street Fighter. It's really helped me. I've just become incredible.
It's really helped you practice.
I don't know that that's untrue though. Like it's not really Street Fighter, but I do meditate and I think that helped me a lot with just my mindset about everything, including games and just like being aware of what you're doing, which a lot of meditation is about. And it sounds so corny, but like it definitely helped me get over a lot of the anger that I used to feel, especially about losing games. Like I love competitive games, but I used to feel a lot of anger, usually at myself. Like I'd usually direct it at myself when I lost games. And that's actually super unproductive and doesn't help you improve at a game. And yeah, I don't really experience that as much anymore. I don't know if it's made me into a phantom at all games ever, but it certainly makes me happier when I'm playing games and makes me experience Tilt a lot less when I'm playing competitive games, at least.
Yeah, like that ability to step outside of yourself and realize the feeling before it happens.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason, Joshua, I'll be interested to talk to you about Destiny raids when you start doing them. Also, I'm hoping one day I can talk you into switching over to PC so we can play together. The raiding in that game, that was like this could be in any MMO. That's my experience as Destiny because that's the game I play. But I've always thought that it's so interesting how it's basically a team building exercise for adults that doesn't exist almost anywhere else.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people, Kotaku even, working at Kotaku, which was my last, you know, like full-time regular job, it's collaborative in some ways. You work with an editor. There are times where you kind of like work together, but it's not as collaborative as a Destiny raid where everyone comes into a room and there's six different roles that everyone needs to fill and you figure it out and one person is the leader and kind of designates it and you like have to execute this whole plan that you come up with and everybody contributes. It's like going and doing an escape room with a group of friends, or tabletop gaming has a lot of this too. And that's like a really cool thing that people don't have a lot of, and it is a good place to like experiment or like experience feelings of frustration and Tilt and kind of, you know, even if it's bad in the moment, you can look back at it and learn something from it, and then it helps you work better with people in the future, and it's also just kind of fun. So yeah, I don't know, I think what I'm saying is that everybody should be playing raids together in MMOs.
And video games are good and cool and they're a good thing.
You heard it here first.
I think that's a happy conclusion for our discussion of a bad video game feeling.
Just stop feeling tilted, okay? Stop it. Cut it out.
Just stop. It's easy. Just stop. Or be like Joshua, just play perfectly all the time.
Oh, well,
all
that's the other way.
You'll never have any tilt.
Be a demigod among
that's
men.
That's the goal, really. Really, that's always kind of the answer. I do want to hear, I wonder if listeners want to write in with stories of Tilt. Hopefully nothing horrible, but like I'm interested to hear people's thoughts. So if you want to write in, we are, as always, of course, at splitscreen@kotaku.com. Tell us your Tilt stories. Tell us your thoughts on Tilt. Joshua, while we've got you here, I want to talk to you about an article that you wrote that I very much enjoyed. The headline, let me find it, is "The Perfect Squad Size is 3 People." And this is maybe my favorite genre of, I'm going to use the word Gawker, RIP, but like Gawker style post, which is just the very simple opinion simply stated about something that maybe people haven't thought about a lot. But I think this is a fascinating argument. I think you make a very convincing argument that the perfect squad size is three people. So can you maybe summarize this argument for our listeners?
Okay. So it it basically is me justifying the fact that I don't have a third friend to play video games with.
Secrets revealed. Joshua doesn't really think this. He just only has two friends.
No, but it's also true, right? Because like when you I think Apex Legends I have been playing a lot of too, right? Where it's just sort of like that game does not have a solo option. Right.
Right.
I mean, it does if you want to be a jerk and like peel away from the squad that you're pulled into. But then there's that sort of social stigma. Right. And when you play with, you know, three random people in like something like Apex Legends. Right. There's only two points of interest for you to pay attention to. Right. Like you can go to does this person need your help or does this person need your help or do they both need your help and you're screwed. Right. So like that's one thing, right? And then there's the other where it's like I've been in, you know, voice chats with, you know, three people, with two people. I've been in voice chats with like eight people, you know, and like it's sort of like once you reach a certain threshold, which in my experience is the three person threshold, right? Like it gets the signal to noise ratio just sort of like gets all out of whack and you're not shooting the breeze as much. You start to just talk about what you need to say and not much else. And I like, you know, like video games are kind of like phone calls for me sometimes.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I like to chat about things that aren't the game in front of me, you know, you know, with occasional I'll be like, oh, check this out. This is cool. You know? So yeah, it's like a mix of those things, right? Where it's just sort of like, you know, the situational awareness, right? Of a lot of the games I play and the social aspect, right? Of like just talking to people and connecting with them and you know, catching up with them and everything like that. Those are kind of why I dig it. And I think I mentioned this in the article and some people were like, oh, what's wrong with duos? And like, that doesn't feel like a hang, you know, like that just feels like, you know, let's go get pizza, you know,
like it's a different thing, right?
Yeah.
So I'm fascinated by this and eternally fascinated by this sort of social dynamics in my Destiny group. And so Destiny has got three player teams for most like kind of standard events or standard activities. Then there's six player raids and you can also just go do something with one person. And you're right that the one person thing is much more like if you want to just go hang out with a guy you haven't talked to in a while or a lady you haven't talked to in a while, like a friend you haven't talked to in a while, if you want to go hang out with them, you can. And then you kind of like catch up and you can kind of maybe more like vent about politics a little more freely because you know everybody there. There's nobody maybe going to be there going to argue with you and you'll have an awkward argument about whatever. But three is good socially. And I like that your argument is primarily social because I feel like there's also like a lot of practical reasons that three is good. Like three is just kind of a stable, it's like a stable, like a tripod, right? It's like a stable number of people. Because when you have two people, it's a little more like a seesaw. And there's like in a game, it can be more like, oh, one person's carrying everything for the other person. Mm-hmm. If one person isn't carrying their weight or like messes up, it like dramatically affects just one other person and you have to go back and forth. If there's three, it's more evenly distributed and it's kind of, you don't wind up taking sides. It's like just there's less friction I find in groups of three, which is cool. And then also just tactically, like the way that a lot of games are designed, three is a solid number. Like three seems like in Gears of War, they announced the new Gears of War, there's going to be three-person squads.
Yeah, and which I think inspired this article, right? Joshua, we were talking about that game in Slack, and then you were like, three is the perfect squad size. And we were like, okay, I guess that's a poster you're going to write.
It. That's your headline. Because I played Gears 4, and I think there were four-person teams in that, and you always had three like AI people with you, even if you weren't playing with people. And it was a lot of people. It was kind of too many. Where the first Gears had two, and that was like kind of also, it was fine, but like, you know, three just seems good there. And so it seems like three is just solid. I don't know, Maddie, what are your thoughts on team size, on squad size?
I agree. I don't really play that many games that have three, but just this morning I was talking to a friend about some issues she's having with her gaming group and like how difficult it is to like put together, because she plays a team shooter, and like how anytime she gets past three people, it's like just more social frictions start to come into the group. Mm-hmm. So I was already thinking about this anyway today, and I feel like that's so true. Even if the game's not designed for it, like your group of people who you play games with consistently, once you get past three, chances are someone's going to disagree with someone, or someone's going to turn out to be the person who gets tilted, not in a fun way, or right. two people are going to start rubbing each other the wrong way. Somehow it's just like the bigger your gaming group gets, the more difficult it becomes to wrangle, not to mention like Google Calendar or whatever you're using to
right,
schedule
like
sessions.
Scheduling.
But yeah, three is pretty practical. Like three, you can kind of keep track of two other people, but beyond that, I just don't know. It seems impossible.
It's so like it's so chat related too, Joshua. You were talking a lot about chat, because like I play board games with a group of five. There's five of us total, and that's fine in real life. That's totally manageable. It's like a good number. But in chat, when you have like lag and delay, and you're not sure who's talking, and everyone's kind of angling to be, oh wait, I know what we should do. No, I know. Okay, you go. Wait, no, I'll just. And there's like passive aggressive sighs happening. Like that. The more people, you definitely kind of get more of that happening.
Right. Like one person wants to have a social conversation, and then another person is like, oh, I'm trying to talk about the game.
Right.
And
we need to focus, guys. Come on. Stop talking about Marvel movies.
Yeah.
It just also helps with like the equal distribution of like talk and smack, right? Because like, you know, you know, like it's because it can be fun to make fun of your friends, you know, but right. like if it's
but
just
you can't
like,
gang up on one person, you can't get outvoted as heavily if there's only three
exactly.
people. Like it's always just two on one, and then the other two can form an alliance or whatever. Three on one is too much.
No, right. Too many people. Definitely. It's definitely a fun article. We will link it in the show notes. And I like that kind of opinion, and I thought you made a good argument for it. Anyways, Joshua Rivera, thank you so much for coming on Kotaku Split Screen. We're really happy to have you here, and I'm glad that you're at Kotaku because I like reading your articles. Where can listeners find you if they want to tweet at you about Tilt or squad size or, you know, anything?
You can find me on Twitter at JM Rivera, R-A-V-E-R-A, 02. I didn't know you could have like cool, fun Twitter handles when I made my Twitter.
Yeah, so. I think that's fairly common. So, all right, well, people can find you there, and we'll hope to have you back on the show soon. Joshua, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back. That was fun. It was a fun chat with Joshua. He's a good dude. Let's talk about some non-gaming things. Maddie, what are your off-topic topics for this week?
Well, my off-topic topics are TV shows that I am watching.
Nice.
I slowly but surely have finished the latest season of Billions, which is 4, I believe. I'm all up to date. And Jason isn't even here for me to talk to about it. But I figured I'd say I'd finished it, and I will share a brief thought about it because I know you don't watch it. But maybe some of the listeners do, and they will care about this.
And I might watch it one day. It does sound fun.
I really enjoy it. And I loved season 4 so much. Ooh. I think someone sent us an email telling us specifically to watch it, probably because it's great. I think it might be my favorite season that they've done.
Oh, wow.
I really loved
it.
So the thing about this show, though, the show is about very, very rich people who work in finance with stocks, you know, shorting stocks. That's their whole job. They work for these capital firms. That's what they do. Those are things that morally, I think, are suspect. I don't love that this is something
that
exists.
I can't imagine why you feel that way.
In our society, I think it's bad. I'm going to say I think it's bad. But these characters, I don't know. It's really tough because I feel like this show is telling a lie, which is that on this show, all of these characters are incredibly intelligent and they're geniuses. They're like fantasy geniuses, and they're so good at their jobs, and they're so good with numbers and math and looking at stocks and information about them and immediately discerning what the right thing to do is to screw each other over. And I don't think that's accurate. I think that there are many rich people who are not super geniuses. I don't really think that meritocracy is accurate and applies to capitalism necessarily. I think that many other things in our society dictate who the richest people are besides merit. But this show presents a fantasy where it is kind of merit-based, and like the people who are super rich are fantasy magical geniuses. And it's really fun to watch, but it is also something that gives me a lot of weird feelings because I'm like, I don't think this is real. I don't think that people who do this are fantasy geniuses. I think that they're maybe, you know, pulling off amazing deals, but I don't know that that means they deserve to have billions of dollars. You know what I'm saying? I feel very conflicted about this show because I think it might be preserving some ideas that we have as a society about like who deserves to have money and who doesn't. But I don't know. There's this character, Taylor Mason. They're the non-binary character. And like, I love them so much on this show. They are one of the fantasy geniuses. They are like always just seeing math in the air or whatever. And like in the previous season, this isn't a major spoiler. It's pretty minor.
That's fine.
In the previous season, they dated a male character, and in this season dated a female character. So, and I looked it up and the actor is pansexual as well. So I was like, oh, this is so fucking cool. Like there's this really cool character who's like such a power fantasy. Like for me as the viewer to see this character succeeding in life and like having all these cool things happen. But I'm also like, this is fake. Like this doesn't exist. There's no like hip non-binary person out there on Wall Street like owning people. Like that is not even the reality in which we live, but whatever. I don't know.
It's like the it's the entertainment conundrum, right? Like you want to if making a show with entertaining characters, they're going to usually be like really amazing and really smart and it's fun to watch people who are like that, but then you could be inadvertently sending the signal that like everyone in this field is that way.
Yeah.
And that totally makes sense what you're saying. I feel like, have you ever watched Succession, that show?
I haven't, and I'm thinking about starting it as like a panacea for myself to like my weird feelings about billions, because it's like kind of a Veep like show, right, where like the rich characters are comedically flawed.
It is a little, it's darker and more serious. It's funnier. I haven't watched a ton of it. Jason's watched more and he really loves it. I want to watch more. I know it's good. Everyone says it's very good. And I very much enjoyed what I watched. But even from what I saw of it, it is very not that. Like it's much more like, oh, you can just have a guy who's successful in business and then his whole family will just be kind of like ridiculous
idiots.
Garbage people and idiots and like all kinds. There's just all kinds of characters.
More accurate, though.
Oh, sure. I'm sure it is. I mean, that seems likely based on some, you know, super famous wealthy families that I can think of. That might be an interesting interesting comparison.
I might check it out. And I just also wanted to say I started watching this show Good Omens, which is based on the Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman book.
Oh,
and
I know it. I've read the book. How's the show?
I love it. I love it much. It's my girlfriend and I have watched the first three episodes. There's only six episodes and we are obsessed with it. Like,
oh, wow. Okay.
Like we, in the middle of episodes, will turn to each other and just say, I love this show. Like every few minutes, like we both are like glued to it. Uh-huh. It's so like this book. Okay. So for people who don't know, it's a book about an angel, a demon. The Antichrist is born and they have to either decide if they're going to prevent the apocalypse or not. And also they aren't supposed to work together, but they kind of have a love-hate relationship with each other. It is one of those books that spawned a million fanfics of people shipping these two characters. The show is extremely gay and just rife with sexual tension.
Nice.
It's Michael Sheen and David Tennant playing the two characters. They are just like hamming it up. It's an extremely gay show without actually literally being a gay show. And it's also very funny and like very much has that sort of Terry Pratchett style humor.
Right, right.
And like bits that are making fun of Christian theology, but like in a sort of tongue-in-cheek way where you wouldn't necessarily be offended if you were Christian. You'd more just be like, yeah, these are the questions that you think about if you think about this theology at all, and like these weird logical fallacies that come up. It's a cool book and now it's a cool show. So yeah, unless the next three episodes are terrible, I recommend it. I think it's great.
Nice. That's good to hear. I like the book a lot and I saw the trailers for the show and stuff and it kind of like registered that this was actually happening. And I think I saw people saying, yeah, it's entertaining, but that's very cool to hear. that it's a good show. That makes me want to watch it. Maybe when we finally finish the endless Veronica Mars.
Yeah, I started watching that too, which is probably a mistake. I've watched like the first two episodes of Veronica Mars so far, and I'm like, oh yeah, this show's really good. Maybe I'll just watch all of this and not have a life.
So that's one of mine is Veronica Mars. My plan, they surprise released season four, the new season, a week early during Comic-Con. And which I was like, guys, I had a whole plan here. Like, I didn't need this a week early. Yeah. I'm sure it made some people happy, though, so that's fine. But yeah, so Emily has never seen it, and I hadn't seen it in a while. We've been rewatching season one, which, yeah, is just great. I mean, like on episode 19, it's so awesome. It's so much fun to watch. So good. And it's so long. Season one, TV shows, like seasons used to be like a million
22 episodes. Yeah,
fully
remember
22
that?
Episodes. Oh, yeah. And like watching it, it really is. I think the new season is 8 episodes. So it's literally almost 3 times the length of what we may think of. You know, Stranger Things was 8 episodes of what we may think of as a regular season of TV. It used to be 3 times as long, which is bonkers. And watching it is just, first off, it's wild that every episode is good, pretty much. There's a couple like ones where I'm like, we didn't really need that. We could have put the big mystery like plot line points at a different episode. We didn't need to do this whole, you know, whatever thing about like the like rap producer's daughter. Like there are just some episodes where I'm like, I don't really care about any of these people. But it is like remarkable how good every episode is. It's wild how many actors who are like super famous or are in things now are on the show. Holy crap, there are people I forgot. Anthony Anderson turns up. Jane Lynch is like this kind of joyless, like really minor cameo who turns up because she then later is on Party Down. A lot of people who are on Party Down, which what's his name?
Adam Scott.
Yeah, Adam Scott is like the star, and Adam Scott is, oh man, in a really good episode of Veronica Mars. What an episode to have be like your first major TV episode. He plays this super creepy dude. And so anyways, there's like just a whole lot of crossover between those two shows, obviously same showrunner. And it's great. Anyways, it's been good. I'm excited to get to the new season. I keep seeing people like posting stuff about the new season, about the ending. And like, I won't even say it here because I was annoyed to see headlines talking about how it ended literally the day that
it went live. I've managed to avoid them so far. I'll go and put some muted words into my Twitter timeline right after this.
I would say do it. I know I'm already, and it's been a week, and you know, fair enough, people will start talking about the show, and I don't even want to know anything. So we'll watch that, and I'm looking forward to it. But it is still just, it's been really, really fun to watch Veronica Mars. It's been a good throwback to that period in my life. And then the only other things for off topic that I want to talk about, first of all, there was a like teaser trailer for the Witcher show that Netflix is doing. This is all stuff that came out of Comic-Con. Yep. And it looks totally rad, and I'm so gonna watch it. It looks like Witchery as hell and great. And they just show, apparently it's based more on the books than the game. The games, though it looks like the games. I mean, like Geralt of Rivia in this show looks quite a bit like Geralt in the show. I know there was like a Witcher TV show, I think a Polish Witcher TV show that they made as well. And Geralt looks a certain way. I mean, he's described a certain way, so it makes sense he'd look that way. But man, the trailer shows all this stuff. There's some stuff I don't even know because I haven't really read many of the books, though I'm pretty familiar with a lot of the content. And like, it shows Yennefer, who's the very famous love interest for Geralt, and she and Triss are like the two big sorceresses in the, it's like a love triangle. But there's a whole thing where like sorceresses like glamour themselves to be like unnaturally beautiful, and there's a whole like complicated backstory to like how sorceresses are made, and the game doesn't really ever get into that. Yennefer is just this like beautiful woman who's like does magic, but it looks like the show is gonna show like Yennefer's whole origin story based on the trailer, which is super cool. I'm very there for that and looking forward to that. Anyways, it just looked ridiculous, and I'm psyched to have a Netflix show to watch that is like that, like another big fantasy show that will maybe, you know,
it could be bad.
I'm like cautiously optimistic. There's like high probability, even maybe like 50-50 that it could be corny, but the trailer was pretty fun. I recommend people check it out. And then the other thing I just wanted to bring up, because I'm sure you have thoughts on this as well, is all that Marvel news that came out of Comic-Con.
Yeah, man, a lot of Marvel news. There's so much.
There's so much. I mean, so they announced a million things, all these TV shows. WandaVision sounds cool, I guess. But the two big things are female Thor, played by Natalie Portman.
Yay!
Which is great. Also the name Love and Thunder, Thor Love and Thunder. Great name.
Great name. Love basically everything Taika Waititi has ever done. Love that he's still directing Thor's.
Yes.
Great. Perfect. Good.
So that's very exciting. And then Mahershala Ali coming out and revealing that he's Blade. What? Like, which is the best thing. And like,
yeah, that
man,
like derailed Kotaku Slack and an entire morning meeting for day afterward, because it was like all anyone wanted to talk about. We like almost pivoted to being the number one Blade fan site that day, but it didn't happen.
I'm kind of surprised.
We just spliced IO9 instead. But yeah, we're excited.
That was
There's
great.
Excitement about Blade.
And I gather he came out that it was like everyone was wearing hats with like their logos on them for like different Marvel characters, and then at the very end it was a very like one more thing, and he came out on stage and was like, hey, I just wanted to like come out and hang out and put on my hat, and he put on a hat with the Blade logo on it, which is super good.
Corny and good. Just
it's good. It's good. Good showbiz stuff. So that's exciting, and I'm psyched to watch that movie whenever it comes out. I'm kind of glad there isn't another Marvel movie for a little while. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Spider-Man movie was a good little pause point after that movie, and we can just wait. We'll see what happens.
It's fine by me. They're just going to pivot to a bajillion TV shows, because again, we have too much free time, and we need to watch six TV shows.
Yeah, I definitely need 3 or 4 more TV shows to put into the mix to watch, because
I
definitely have
keep it up, Marvel, I guess.
Sure, you're doing great. All right, so we have one more thing to get to before we wrap up, and that is the music pick of the week. This one is a pretty freaking cool music pick. Before I get into it, there's a new Strong Songs this week for a little song that listeners may have heard of called Paranoid Android by Radiohead. This
heard is one of I've it? Obviously, heard of it?
Yeah, heard of it, maybe.
Listened to it in high school along with everybody else.
Yep. This is highly recommended or highly requested from listeners. And really cool song. So that was, I did a big breakdown of that. It was very fun to learn that, to rewatch the old music video for that, which is so weird. It's so 90s MTV. It's like animated. It's very liquid television-y. Super cool. So that was cool. Go listen to that if you want to know more about that Radiohead song. But the music pick is by an artist named Emily King, who is a singer, songwriter, an amazing like soul singer who I didn't even know about. And then a friend of mine told me about just last week. She has a new album out called Scenery, and she is dope, man. She's good. So this is a song called Remind Me. I think it's the opening track on this album. The whole album is really, really good. But here's a clip of Emily King singing Remind Me. You remind me of something else, something that I used to feel, something like what I've been missing. Good, right?
This is I'm gonna pick up this album. I'm gonna get it.
Yeah,
I
it's
love
got
this.
That kind of, it's like a kind of a soul like Eurythmics thing going on, maybe. I feel like that sound is kind of in the like Annie Lennox soul singing style. Like, she doesn't, her vocally sounds a little different, but man, it's like on headphones too. This album is produced just immaculately. There's all this beautiful stuff going on. It's really good stuff. Emily King, who knew? There's like so many good musicians out there. There's like this endless amount of good music. It's ridiculous.
There's too much content is what you're saying.
It's true.
There should really be fewer content. Great.
Everybody stop making good stuff, please.
No,
we're all drowning
keep it up.
In it.
Keep
we're
it
just
up.
Drowning. Just kidding. Please keep making cool stuff. You're all awesome. We love your content. All right. That does it for this episode. We'll be back in another week with another guest and some more conversations and many more video games. I'm looking forward to hearing from listeners about Tilt. We'll see if they have some interesting Tilt thoughts to share with us.
Yeah, and I'll have a new monitor, so that'll
That's
be great.
That's right. That's going to be exciting. All right. Well, until then, Maddie, I will see you in a week.
Bye.
Kotaku Split Screen is an official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Jason Schreier, Maddie Myers, and me, Kirk Hamilton. I edit and mix the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. We're a part of the Fusion Podcast Network, where Mandana Mofidi is executive producer of audio. You can find us on popular podcast services like Panoply, NPR One, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts, and we hope that you'll leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at kotaku.com/splitscreen. Email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.